Good morning, 10:15 having arrived, I'm going to call this meeting of the Tax Committee to order for Thursday, March 20th. There is a quorum present. First item on the agenda is moving the minutes from March 19th, 2025. Vice Chair Joy, have you had a time to review the minutes, and could I get a motion from you?
I have, Madam Chair, and yes, I will motion.
Excellent. So Vice Chair Joy has moved the minutes for March 19th, 2025. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Motion carries. The minutes for March 19th are adopted. So members, we have six bills on the agenda today. They concern the child tax credit and property tax refunds. So since we have kind of, we're going to do things a little bit differently. We have a chunk of child tax credit bills, and so we're going to have Mr. Williams give us a little bit of background and overview, and then we're going to take testimony kind of on child tax credit issues, and then we're going to go to hearing the bills, if that's okay with everyone. All right, so first we're going to go to Mr. Williams for an overview.
Chair Gomez and members, I'm going to be kind of working off of this document that's in your packet that's titled Minnesota's Child Credit and Working Family Credit. It's dated February 2025. Sort of at a high level, I think the most important thing to know about these two credits is that while we have two sort of refundable income tax credits that are targeted mostly towards lower income individuals, they're sort of intertwined in law. So the way I kind of think about it is there's a credit for younger children that's $1,750, and that applies to children that are 17 and younger. There's also a credit for older children. Those are smaller per child amounts, and they vary based on how many older children you have. And then there's also a credit based on earned income, and that's equal to 4% of the first $9,480 of earned income. So the maximum credit based on earned income is $379 in 2025. When a taxpayer files and claims this credit, those three credits are added together, and then the combined amount is phased out. If you look on the back of the sheet in front of you, you'll see the phase outs. So the phase out for married joint filers begins at $37,910. For unmarried filers, it begins at $31,950. Sort of flipping back to the other side, I'm sorry to go back and forth here. To be eligible for the credit, there's a few requirements. The first is you have to be eligible for the federal earned income credit with two exceptions. The first exception is that the federal earned income credit requires taxpayers to have a Social Security number to file and claim the credit, and the state credit does not. Second, childless taxpayers are ineligible for the federal earned income credit if they're 19 to 24-year-olds, but in Minnesota they are eligible for the state working family credit. There's also a federal test that we adopt for Minnesota purposes for the credit that you cannot qualify if you have significant investment income of $11,000 in 2024. If you filed a separate return and were married, so you were married filing separate, or if you were claimed as a dependent on another return. The child credit amount, as I said, is $1,750 per qualifying child. If you have one older child, that's increased by $1,000 in 2025. If you have two older children, it's increased by $2,279. And if you have three older children, it's increased by $2,710. Those amounts are indexed for inflation. And then the sort of difference between the older child and the younger child amounts, the younger child amounts apply to children 0 to 17. All 18-year-old credit children get the credit for older children. And then children 19 to 23 that are permanently or totally disabled or are students also qualify. This publication notes that, as we've heard in committee before, they're going to begin offering advanced payments of this credit in 2025, in calendar year 25, so later this year. To receive those advanced payments of the credit, taxpayers will have to opt in to advanced payments when they file their return this year. I'm not going to walk through the details on the back sheet of the paper, but I might just point out that sort of your amount of your credit increases based on the number of children you have, and then the income at which the credit is fully phased out varies depending on how many kids you have, because you're sort of phasing down from a larger amount. In general, you're not going to be eligible for this credit if you earn more than $100,000 unless you have five or more children, so none of the people on this graph or in this table are eligible at that income level. So that's that concludes the overview. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Are there any questions for Mr. Williams before we turn to testifiers on the bills? All right, not seeing any. We're going to move to public testimony. And then we're going to briefly hear the child tax credit bills and lay them over for possible inclusion in the tax bill. So first up, Nan Madden and Alexandra Fitzsimmons, you're on deck. Welcome back to the committee. Please just introduce yourself briefly as you get going.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Nan Madden. I'm Director of the Minnesota Budget Project, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today about Minnesota's nation-leading child tax credit. I have worked in tax policy for about 25 years, and I can honestly say I've never been more excited about a tax policy that I think is truly transformational for many Minnesota kids and families. Minnesota's child tax credit builds on a strong body of research on the federal child tax credit and other income-boosting tax credits that shows they are successful in expanding opportunities for children and improving their health and performance in school, as well as narrowing gaps in economic well-being, especially for children living in rural areas and children of color. I appreciate the overview that Mr. Williams provided, and I would draw attention on the handout to the income qualify, just to lift up a couple. For tax year 2025, a married couple filing jointly will qualify for the child tax credit until their income reaches about $55,600 if they have one child, up to about $70,000 if they have two children, and then that income limit increases with additional numbers of children in the family. I also would like to lift up some provisions specific to Representative Norris's bill, 2302, which is a bill that would expand the child tax credit's definition of a qualifying child to include 18-year-olds. I'd like to echo the remarks you heard from Christy Snyder of Youth Prize on Tuesday when she spoke to this proposal and the important role it can play in investing in our young people so that they have a successful launch into adulthood. The difference for families between a child who is 17 and a child who is 18 with our current tax credit structure could be as much as $780, and it could be greater than that if the family has more than one 18-year-old. And when we consider that an 18-year-old is likely still in high school, the difference between a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old feels particularly arbitrary. We thank you for considering that proposal, as well as other targeted improvements to the child tax credit. These would build on a proven strategy to improve family well-being and reduce hardship among Minnesota families, and can be a cost-effective way that also protects state revenues that are needed to fund healthcare, schools, childcare, and other public services that children, their families, and Minnesotans of all ages count on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madden. Alexandra Fitzsimmons and Christy Snyder, you're on deck. I don't know if she's here. Okay, Jason Atkins will be after Ms. Fitzsimmons unless Ms. Snyder pops up. So welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Alexandra Fitzsimmons, and I'm the Senior Policy Director with Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. CDF Minnesota advocates for policies and programs that improve the well-being of children and increase the economic security of families. We focus particular attention on children who have been pushed to the margins, children living in poverty, Black children, American Indian children, children from communities of color, and children living with disabilities. Tax credits are a proven two-generational approach to increasing a family's financial stability while also improving overall child well-being, especially during a child's earliest years. For many years, CDF Minnesota has worked in coalition to further tax policies that align with our mission and vision. We have worked at the Capitol to expand the working family credit and create a robust version of the child tax credit. And we have worked throughout Minnesota with our Bridge to Benefits partners to educate families about and connect families with meaningful tax credits. Today, I'm excited to testify in support of House File 2254, which creates a $400 child tax credit bonus for newborn babies. There are few things in life that are more exciting than welcoming a new baby into your family. Preparing for your baby's arrival is exciting too. Imagining what your baby will look like and how your baby will feel cradled in your arms, creating a list of possible baby names, finding your baby's pediatrician, shopping for diapers, bottles, and onesies, putting together a crib, and properly installing your baby's first car seat, possibly in the hospital parking lot before you take your baby. While these preparations bring joy, they can also bring stress and anxiety to young families. Having a baby is expensive. Cost estimates for expenses during the first year of a baby's life are wide-ranging and include medical costs, cribs, other furniture, car seats, baby carriers, strollers, daily care items, feeding supplies, clothing, toys, and childcare. Estimates fall anywhere between $20,000 and $50,000 for first-year expenses. A $400 child tax credit bonus for newborn babies can reduce financial strain on parents and help maintain economic stability for families at a time when family income may be waning due to taking off time from work or cutting back hours to care for their new baby. A larger child tax credit for new babies will boost income when it's needed most. Furthermore, getting money to families when a child is an infant or a toddler is an important priority for Minnesota. These early years are essential for a child's development, but parents' incomes tend to be lower when their children are younger. 80% of brain development happens in the first 3 years of a child's life. In Minnesota, younger children are more likely to be living in economically fragile families. 27% of babies born in Minnesota are born into low-income households, which is about $52,000 for a family of three in 2024. Research indicates that income supplements received during a child's earliest years can improve a child's future and education outcomes. Lastly, in addition to this bill benefiting young children and families, there's also a benefit to our state. When Minnesota invests early, very early, in the lives of young children, it's sending a powerful message of welcome, support, and partnership. What better message is there than to say to a new family and a new baby, we're glad you're here. Thank you for thoughtfully considering our support of House File 2254 and placing the well-being of our youngest members of Minnesota and their families in the center of your decisions.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzsimmons. Are there any questions for these testifiers before we move on? Not seeing any. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Atkins. Please just introduce yourself as you go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, and members of the committee. I'm Jason Atkins, Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. We're encouraged by all the child tax credit bills being heard here today, but want to testify in support of HF 2502 to expand the phase-out threshold for the credit, especially for married filing jointly households. We are also advocating another bill to expand the phase-out threshold by 20% across the board, HF 2339, which has strong bipartisan support in both chambers, but we believe this bill is a good proposal as well. When we proposed the creation of a nation-leading child tax credit in 2022, we did so on the principle that budget and tax negotiations, or decisions, excuse me, should be made in with the concern of the well-being of families as our number one consideration. Families are our state's most valuable asset. They are creating and nurturing our future. Yet low and middle income families are struggling to afford the cost of living. We know that economics plays a role in family formation. As a state, we should provide tax relief to remove as many financial barriers as possible to the cost of raising children and even incentivize where prudent. And we should do so in a way that trusts families to make the best judgments for their children by putting money back in their pocket rather than making them access benefits through the state's preferred provider. The child tax credit has already been a lift to hundreds of thousands of Minnesota kids for an average credit size of $1,200 per child. Undoubtedly, this is making a dent in child poverty and helping families stay out of poverty. But we need to expand the eligible households who qualify for the credit, because many do not have the same breadth of access to the programs available to lower income families. Now, make no mistake, the households who will qualify under this proposal should in no way be considered wealthy. Rather, this bill expands the credit deeper into the middle class, offering greater assistance to those who are doing the important work of raising the next generation. The bill wisely expands eligibility in a way that affirms the importance of marriage and household stability for children by making the phase-out threshold significantly higher for married joint filers. We understand the long-term fiscal forecast is cloudy, but our state's families need help now, especially when we read that we are already having population problems, and policy reports from places such as the Chamber and the Center for Rural Policy note that population increases are due largely to migration and that fertility is flat. We need children, and we need to make Minnesota a state where families want to stay and want to thrive. There are more pieces to the family economic security puzzle, including housing costs, but let's trust families and get out of the way of the important work that they are doing. A budget that accrues savings while also providing reasonable and targeted tax relief to our state's families can be a great bipartisan victory this year. We would encourage members to work together to help Minnesota's families. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Atkins? Not seeing any. Alicia Donahue? Great. Welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself as you're getting started with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Alicia Donahue, and I'm here today both as a new parent and an expecting one. My spouse and I welcomed our daughter into the world a year and a half ago, and we have another one on the way. Like many growing families, we're filled with joy, hope, and excitement, but also the very real financial pressure that comes with raising children. I'm asking you to support House File 2254. This bill will provide a $400 baby bonus on the child tax credit the first year of life. When you pass bills like this, you're doing more than just adjusting a tax policy. You're giving families like mine a real lifeline. You're helping us afford the essentials that every baby needs: diapers, formula, a safe place to sleep, and medical expenses. These aren't luxuries. They're the foundation of a healthy start in life. And in those first critical months, every dollar counts. Research consistently shows that the first 12 months of life are among the most crucial period for a child's development. During this time, rapid brain growth occurs, doubling in the first year. And early experiences, both positive and negative, can shape cognitive, emotional, and physical development in lasting ways. In addition to being a mom, I'm a clinical social worker with over two decades of experience, and I would be remiss not to mention what I've seen firsthand over and over in my career. Secure attachment to caregivers in the first year provides a foundation for emotional resilience and mental well-being. Babies who experience consistent, loving care develop better social and emotional skills later in life. Studies also show that children who receive strong early support, including financial stability in the household, tend to perform better in school and have a higher lifetime earning, are less likely to encounter social and health challenges. Investments in early childhood, including financial support for families, yield long-term economic benefits by reducing the need for later life interventions. Back to my family personally, as a young and growing family, we feel the impact of every price increase. Whether it's childcare, groceries, or doctor visits, the costs keep adding up. And while we're working hard to provide for our children, we can't do it alone. When the legislature prioritizes policies like the baby bonus, you're showing that our state values families, not just in words, but in real, tangible actions. We always hear about the importance of making our state a great place to live, work, and raise a family. This is your chance to prove it. Given how foundational the first year is, policies that ease financial burdens like this $400 baby bonus can make a meaningful difference. Helping parents afford basic necessities isn't just about short-term relief. It's an investment in healthier, more successful children and families. I urge you to support House File 2254 and invest in families like mine. A $400 baby bonus in the first year of life isn't just a policy, it's a peace of mind for parents trying to do right by their children. Families like mine and thousands of others across the state are counting on you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your testimony and congratulations, and thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Donahue before she leaves? Not seeing any. Thank you. Is Ms. Snyder here? I don't see her. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the child tax credit bills? All right, not seeing any, we will move to the bills. First up is House File 2254. Representative Hansen is going to move that House File 2254 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 taxes bill. Representative Hansen, welcome to your committee. Please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. House File 2254 is a child tax credit baby bonus of $400 on top of the child tax credit that would be available to families in the taxable year of their baby's birth. This robust credit for families with newborns is a meaningful investment in young families when their children are at a crucial moment in their lives. Research tells us that income supplements received when a child is young can improve a child's future health, education, and even their future earnings. Around 25,000 children could benefit from this bonus. And it's important that whatever we do this year in the legislature, that we get these kinds of tax breaks right into the hands of families who need them the most. Members, while I love that what this bill does and what could do for our families, like we heard from our testifiers, I also want to take a moment to acknowledge that this is an actual, real-life, bipartisan bill, and not just the kind with just one member from the other party on it, even though those are okay too. I do want to take a moment to thank my Republican co-authors, Chair Davids, Reps McDonald, Nelson, Olson, Nadeau, Harder, Zalesnikar, Rarick, and Schultz, as well as my fellow tax committee members and everyone who signed on to show Minnesota families that you support this proposal. There's 35 co-authors on this bill, hailing from Fairmont to St. Cloud, from Preston to Hinckley, from Duluth to Henderson, from Rochester to both of the Twin Cities, and representatives from the north, south, east, and west suburbs. And whether our hometown color is red, blue, or purple, this bill is a reflection of what Minnesotans statewide expect us to come together here at the Capitol to do to bring home to them. When we take off our jerseys and dig in and find the solutions that our communities sent us here to find, we can all bring home something meaningful and meaningful relief that families border to border actually need. So aside from this being a really good bill that will help families when they need it the most as they grow their families, it's also my opinion that any bills that Rep. Smith, Norris, Schultz, and Stevenson can agree on is a bill you should support too. I want to thank everyone who testified today, including my friend Alicia. This was her first time testifying, and I think it speaks to the power of when we make sure we open up these opportunities to folks in our communities that they can come in and tell us stories that you may not have heard before. So with that, I'll turn it back. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Is there any discussion on Representative Hansen's bill or any questions for her? All right. Seeing none, Representative Hansen is going to renew her motion that House File 2254 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it is laid over. Thank you. Up next, Representative Rehm has joined us. We have House File 2502. Welcome to the committee. Please tell us about your bill, Representative Rehm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So first of all, I want to start by thanking all those who worked on the child tax credit last year. What was passed was transformative, and I think we all can be proud of that. Looking at House File 2502, I think it's good to start out with what the current law states, which is that the child tax credit is a refundable credit equal to $1,750 for each qualifying child. And the phase-out threshold for tax year 2025 is $37,910 for married joint filers and $31,950 for all other filers. And this proposed law would increase the phase-out threshold for married joint filers to twice the amount for other filers. So for tax year 2025, the married joint phase-out threshold would be $63,900. The threshold for other filers is unchanged at $31,950, and the amounts would be annually adjusted for inflation with a statutory year of 2025 starting tax year 2026. I'll keep it short and simple, but I will say that last session, when we passed our child tax credit, you know, it was transformative. It pulled our children out of poverty. And I will say that the budgets that we make here and the decisions that we make on these tax credits are a reflection of our values. In the previous session in the Minnesota legislature, we showed that we valued education, affordable housing, workers, and tax cuts for families and the working class. This bill expands on what we passed last session and improves it by eliminating the penalty for married couples. So it's important that we don't penalize people for marrying who they love. Thank you for hearing this bill, and I would appreciate your support.
Thank you very much, Representative Rehm. I forgot to move that House File 2502 be laid over. Are there any questions or any discussion on Representative Rehm's bill? All right, seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 2502 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it is laid over. Thank you so much, Representative Ream.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, up next we have Representative Norris, House File 2302. And Representative Norris is going to move that House File 2302 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill. Representative Norris, welcome back to your committee. Please go ahead and describe your bill.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. I am pleased to present House File 2302, which continues our litany of child tax credit bills today. This one would expand or treat 18-year-olds the same as children ages 0 to 17 under the child tax credit. And Ms. Madden did an excellent job earlier explaining many of the benefits of this. But you know, when you think about it practically, for most 18-year-olds, they're still living at home. They're still often in high school. Ms. Madden also highlighted the importance of that transition period and the costs that are involved with propelling that 18-year-old onto their future. So this, again, I think is a common sense bill that's got bipartisan support and can expand on the really great child tax credit that we created here in Minnesota in 2023.
All right. Thank you so much for that description, Representative Norris. Moving to member discussion, are there any questions or comments on House File 2302? Not seeing any. 18-year-olds don't cost any less than 17-year-olds, it turns out, do they, Representative Norris? They don't eat less, I don't think. All right, any final thoughts? Great. So no, with that, Representative Norris is going to renew his motion that House File 2302 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it is laid over. Thank you, Representative Norris. Okay, all right, so we're going to switch now. That concludes our child tax credit bills. And so we now have a few bills that are related to the property tax refunds. And up first is House File 2086. Representative Wolgamott, welcome to the committee. So happy to have you. Please go ahead and describe your bill whenever you're ready.
Chair Gomez and members of the committee, it is great to be here in taxes to present House File 2086, which is a bill to expand eligibility for the Senior Property Tax Deferral Program. Madam Chair and members, a little background on the Senior Property Tax Deferral Program. It allows property taxpayers who are 65 years or older and whose total household income is $96,000 or less to defer a portion of their homestead property taxes until some later time. The goal is to provide senior citizens whose property taxes are high relative to their incomes, but who wish to stay in their homes, an option for paying their property taxes. We know, Madam Chair, that seniors all throughout the state of Minnesota are currently facing a ferocious financial balancing act. The cost of living goes up and up and up, but seniors' incomes remains fixed. And a lot of that is forcing seniors to make some tough choices about being able to afford to stay in their homes that often they've lived in for decades, but their income remains fixed, property taxes go up. Again, it's putting them in a real pinch. So I'm bringing forward House File 2086 to expand this program that helps keep seniors in their homes. What House File 2086 does is it increases from $96,000 to $110,000, the household income limit for the Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program. It also reduces from 5 to 2 the minimum number of years the homeowner must own and occupy the property to qualify for the program. And one last thing I'll note, Madam Chair and members, there is a revenue impact on this bill. It would be approximately $40,000 in the 26-27 biennium and $230,000 in the 28-29 biennium. Madam Chair and members, that is my reason for bringing the bill forward. That's what the bill does. That is how much the bill would have an impact on our revenue. And I'm happy, I know I have some testifiers and I'll be happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Representative Wolgamott. Luckily, whether it's $4 billion a year or $40,000 a year, Chair Davids has directed us not to think about the financial impact of tax bills, so we're good. Sorry, that was a tax joke. Well, we're here to talk ideas, concepts, values. Okay, so so we have a testifier. Mr. Hilgart, welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, members of the committee. My name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. And thank you for the opportunity to give short remarks today. I never miss an opportunity to talk about the senior property tax deferral because it is a program that's very valued by our collective membership, county commissioners across the state. It's a good public policy thing, and I'll go into a couple reasons on why it is. And so thank you in 2023, acting in a bipartisan fashion, for increasing this deferral program by taking down the income limitations, changing it from 10 years to 5 years. This bill, thanks to Representative Wolgamott, would do even more. I think this issue has been spotlighted by the author very well, but it is one of those issues of property taxes, which I'm sure each one of you have gotten calls from your constituents saying, property taxes are rising, I don't have the capacity to pay. What I appreciate about this mechanism is it doesn't pit different families or individuals against each other. Instead of how other states have approached this issue by creating limited value or complex tax mechanisms that really just shifts property tax burden from one class to, let's say, a small family with kids where they're paying a disproportionate amount of their income to childcare, this doesn't do this. So I really appreciate how this mechanism is created. It's also not in a silo. So yes, there are some factors that folks need to take into consideration before they utilize this program, but it's not in a silo by itself in consideration with other property tax relief mechanisms that this committee has acted in a bipartisan way to do, whether that's increasing the homestead exclusion, increasing the property tax refund, a bill that we'll hear later today, increasing the targeted property tax refund, or a litany of other things that we've done to try to address senior home stability through other various committees. And while this is kind of this last option picture, it's a really important one because if you qualify, what we're saying is that you have a right to stay in your home and we will take care of you and you should age in place. And I think that's a really important principle. We fully stand supportive of that as the Association of Minnesota Counties, and we thank the author for his authorship of this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hilgart. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify? Or any questions for Mr. Hilgart, even though he's leaving already? Just kidding. you're good. You're good. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott, for bringing this to the committee. I really like the moving from 5 to 2 for how many years you have to stay in your home. The old credit was at 15, and it really was hard for seniors that were going to want to downsize that they would lose that credit for a really long time before they could get it back again. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, our former property tax chair there. You can tell. And we do. I appreciate Mr. Hilgart highlighting so many of the changes to property taxes that we propose in this committee actually just shifts the burden of the levy onto other property taxpayers. And so we appreciate, ideas that don't do that and that try to address a problem and don't create, a problem for somebody else potentially. Is there any further discussion? Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, I've heard about this a lot in my district, but it didn't go far enough. I'm sure you heard the same thing. And any feedback that you've gotten this last year on this, I'm curious because I've gotten a lot, but they wanted to go a little bit more.
Mr. Hilgart.
Representative Hewitt, Madam Chair, it's a great question. I really appreciate Department of Revenue, too. I just talked to Ms. Bayers in the audience just recently, putting in the numbers of utilization. We're still around that 500 number. That is more than it was in previous years. I think one thing, and maybe our association can do a little bit better job of this, too, is we try to utilize the truth in taxation process and property tax notices as a way to get other information out to folks. So we've encouraged as an organization that when you're sending out those property tax notices, send out information on the senior property tax deferral program as well as the targeted property tax refund so that when folks are looking at their property tax impact, they're also saying, oh, maybe I qualify for this. This committee has had robust discussion about how we can be better educating folks about the benefits that are available and how to utilize them. So that's something maybe we could, as an association, we'll continue to heighten and press our members to do.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgart. Representative Hewitt?
Madam Chair, just to follow up, this is a big issue in suburban Minnesota, I feel, because what I hear over and over again from my seniors is it's cheaper to stay in their homes than it is to go get that downsized home. And then on top of it, the property taxes are making them have a big quandary with this. So I think this is a great tool, and we need to advance it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to extend a little bit of what Mr. Hogart was saying, because I know he can't say this, but want to just reamplify that this is why things like Free File and also funding VITA sites is really important, because that really does help the people who are seniors like this, who are income limited, who may not otherwise know they can take advantage of these programs. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Is there any further discussion from members? All right, not seeing any. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2086, excuse me. We got a couple bills up today. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2086 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the opportunity to present House File 2086. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. It's laid over. All right, moving on to House File 2475, Representative Tabke, welcome to the committee. Please, I'm going to move that House File 2475 be laid over for possible inclusion. Please describe your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. House File 2475 is extension and expansion of the Homestead Credit Refund. So it's often known as the property tax refund here in Minnesota. And what this is doing is it is getting more money into the pockets of people who need it. It's a very targeted property tax refund, which will help seniors in Minnesota. It will also help folks that are on the lower end of the income brackets, and make sure that we are getting more refund into their pockets every year, because we know that property taxes and Minnesotans are feeling the pinch of property taxes. We want to make sure that we are giving them as much help as we possibly can without impacting our local jurisdictions. And so what this bill does is for folks that make less than $52,959 a year, this reduces the copay portion of the property tax refund by 5%. And so that's the center column on the bill as you read 2475. And happy to take questions, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Tabke. So we're going to move first to testifiers. Nathan Jessen. Welcome back to the committee. Mr. Jessen.
Chairs Gomez and Davids, members of the committee, my name is Nathan Jessen. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the Minnesota Inter-County Association on House File 2475. MIKE is an organization of 17 of the largest counties in the state outside of Hennepin and Ramsey, with member counties in both metro and greater Minnesota. I've included a letter with support, with background, with support on this bill, the previous bill, and also the next bill as well, if you'd like to take a look at that. We've long been supportive of property tax refunds as a way to provide direct property tax relief to Minnesotans without causing property tax shifts onto other homeowners. This bill would increase the homestead credit refund for 174,000 homeowners statewide. While property taxes aren't the most regressive tax, they are still regressive, and it's also the tax that's least based on the ability to pay. The homestead credit refund's been around for over 40 years in Minnesota, and Minnesota has been kind of a leader on programs like this. There's now similar programs in over 30 other states. It's also structured in a practical way. It only provides relief if property taxes exceed a certain percentage of income, while ensuring that the homeowner still pays a copay of property taxes above that threshold. I know that the budget forecast may constrain some of the options available to this committee, but if providing direct property tax relief is a goal this session, this bill and the two others in this vein that you're hearing today are the kinds of bills this committee should be considering. And as always, if you have any questions on this bill or others like it, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. And I'd just like to thank Representative Tabke for carrying the bill and the committee for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Jessen. Are there any questions for the testifier? Not seeing any. We'll move to member discussion. All right. Not seeing any discussion. You have any final thoughts, Representative Tabke?
No, thank you, everybody. I appreciate the support. This will help people who targeted toward people who really need help without impacting our local jurisdiction. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2475 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it's laid over. All right. Last up, we have another bill from Representative Norris, House File 2315. And I believe there is an A1 amendment. So, Representative Norris, would you like to move your bill for conclusion and move your amendment?
Yes, Chair Gomez. I move House File 2315 to be laid over for consideration in the omnibus bill. And then I would also move the A1 amendment, and I can describe that briefly if you'd like.
Great, please do.
So the A1 amendment gets the bill into the shape that we intended. There's two times in the statute where the number 12 needs to be changed to the number 6. The bill as drafted only changed one of those, so this amendment changes the other reference, and the revenue estimate that you have in your packets is reflective of this amendment.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Representative Norris. So all those in favor of adopting the A1, getting the bill in the form the author would like, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Motion carries. A1 is adopted. Bill is in the form you'd like. Please describe your bill.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. So my community, like many across the state, is facing hefty property tax increases. Now, this is not a critique of our cities, our counties, and our school districts. We've talked quite extensively in this committee already this year about the challenges our local government leaders are facing that have led to those levy increases. But for instance, in Blaine, we're facing double-digit levy increases at both the city and the county level. So this bipartisan bill helps to address this issue by making permanent one of the tax cuts that we included in the 2023 tax bill. The special targeting property tax refund has been on the books for years. Currently, if your property tax is increased by more than 12% year over year, you qualify for a special property tax refund from the state of up to $1,000. In 2023, we supercharged this tax refund. We reduced the qualification threshold from a 12% increase to a 6% increase, and we increased the maximum refund from $1,000 to $2,500. This bill would make that supercharging permanent. With our local units of government facing significant financial headwinds from inflation to increased human services costs to the potential loss of federal funding, this bill is a way we can take some of the edge off property tax increases for our shared constituents. And with that, Chair Gomez, I'm proud to have my county commissioner, Commissioner Julie Jepson, with me to testify.
Excellent. Commissioner Jepson, thank you so much for joining us. Please just introduce yourself for the record as you get started with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Julie Jepson. I'm an Anoka County Commissioner representing the cities of Blaine and Spring Lake Park, and thank you to Representative Norris for bringing this issue to your attention to hopefully include in the omnibus bill at the end of the session. So when I introduce myself as a county commissioner, you know, when you're out door knocking, campaigning, 9 times out of 10, every single person gets a sheepish look on their face and said, I am so sorry, but what does a county commissioner actually do? Right? So we are often referred to as the invisible layer of government. We don't make decisions in building buildings like cities do, or developments like cities do, or get the privilege of making laws like state, like you representatives get to do. Nope, we're the invisible layer that works with both life's extremes plus everyone in the middle, and often say we're there with you from birth to death and often after death because of our medical examiners and coroner's offices. Anoka County's budget is a little over $400 million. A third of that budget goes to the sheriff's office, a third of that budget goes to local government, libraries, license and passport centers, Children's Protection Agency, the jails, the courts, things like that. But a third of it goes, about $130 million goes to Human Services, which includes hundreds of programs and services that you all mandate on us, that we all partner with you and the federal government for. The only way that counties can increase our revenue is through an increase in property tax. No county commissioner wants to increase property tax. That is the worst part of our job, but that is the undesirable role that we take on. We have to, because we have to provide those services that you mandate, the federal government mandates. And we have to offer them at a level that residents want and need and deserve. So over the last few years, but most recently this past year, counties across Minnesota are facing serious pressures due to the rising cost of inflation, wage adjustments, and higher costs of all of these services. All of these have required us to raise our levy amounts well above and beyond what is financially stable and fiscally responsible. Typically, 2-4% on average per year is the goal. Additionally, a change in market pressures has caused huge jumps in residential property values. So there are three reasons why now is the time to support HF 2315. The maximum refund amount hasn't increased in over 30 years. Number two, the governor's budget proposal, which doesn't cut anything, but shifts a lot of those services and costs to counties, and for Anoka County, those cost shifts will require us to increase our property tax levy at a baseline of 5%. And those are services and programs that we know about. We don't even know the true impact of Earned Sick and Safe Time yet, Family Medical Leave Act, and things like that. And third reason to support House File 2315 is our constituents are really hurting now. They are really hurting today. And the future isn't looking very good either. With anticipated changes at the federal level, the financial burdens on our constituents, your constituents, and mine, young and old, will be profound. This legislative session, through the support of House File 2315, you will not only help your constituents with sticker shock of rising property values, but you will continue your strong track record in helping local governments that manage these property taxes like counties and cities. Will the amended changes be life-changing? Probably not, maybe not. But what if maybe, just maybe they are? And so I respectfully ask for your support for House File 2315 as counties, cities, Association of Minnesota Counties, and Minnesota Inter-County Association support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Commissioner Jepson. Representative Johnson, did you have a question for the commissioner?
Yes.
Great, please
Thank
go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and I saw one of our testifiers, Matt, just leave because that was probably a question for him. But you had mentioned, thank you for bringing this bill forward. Thank you. As a former county commissioner, I feel your pain of what you're dealing with. So this is going to help residents to potentially handle some of these increases that the governor has projected, I think $200 million going down to the counties. So if that $200 million goes down to the counties, how will that affect, or has Anoka County looked at it yet, how would it affect Anoka County, and would that pretty much wipe out anything that this bill would do and then would actually increase more, is my question, just how those two relate.
Commissioner Jepson.
Yeah, thank you for that question. And there will be a dramatic impact with all of those costs being shifted to the county. I mentioned that we will have to raise our levy at least 5% to cover those shifts. And so that will dramatically increase property taxes because that doesn't even cover the work that we need to do in our own county as far as wage increases, cost of living, collective bargaining agreements and additions. And so those cost shifts will directly impact all residents because of that increase in levy that we have no choice but to increase. However, you know, there comes a line when we can't increase it so much. Anoka County, like Representative Norris just said, Anoka County raised its levy double digits, as did the city of Blaine, in 1 year. We cannot continue to raise our levy year after year double digits because then these dollars, they're just a drop in the bucket. And so eventually we'll have to dramatically cut services, and people will be impacted that way otherwise. Does that answer your question?
Representative Johnson?
Representative Gomez, thank you, it does. But it gives really an example of we're just trying to, the dike is breaking, and we're trying to put a finger in this little dike here that really is doing nothing when it's breaking around and costing those things, if you agree.
Absolutely agree.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wouldn't say I'm glad to hear that the Metro is dealing with some of these things, but it really reflects what we've been saying out in rural counties for quite some time. And I thank you very much for bringing that up. Those shifts that are coming from the state level to the counties, especially counties like mine, Todd and Wadena, who are a couple of the poorest counties in the state, have been saying this, that we cannot sustain this. And they have tried very hard to limit their levies. And I think the last time one of the counties did like 0.03%. And the only way they can do that is by cutting. Cutting essential services to the counties and the people, the citizens in my area. And with the new shifts that you're talking about, they are afraid. They're not worried about what's happening at the national level because they can't control that. They're very concerned about what's happening at the state level because these are things that we should be able to control. But that shift is frightening for our rural counties out there. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Weiner. Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this bill forward. I know folks have been working on that for a year, and I really appreciated the temporary one we did. It'd be nice to extend it. I think one of the problems with the temporary one was that people didn't hear about it and did not take advantage of it. So, you know, it makes a difference. And I just want to thank you for being a county commissioner. I know it is kind of that invisible layer of government that does a ton. When it comes to property taxes, it's so hard for us to control that from the state level because we can exclude on the front end or we can refund or credit on the back end. In the middle, a city's going to city, a school's going to school, and a county's going to county because that's what local government is about, making those decisions at the local level. So this is a way to, for us to help at the state level folks if they are seeing an increase in property taxes. And I see this is for payable for December 2025, so that'd be on the property taxes for 2024.
Representative Norris?
Chair Gomez, Representative Joachim, I believe that's correct, but it might be helpful to have our House Fiscal confirm that for us.
Mr. Williams?
Chair Gomez and members, so it's effective with refunds based on property taxes payable in 2026, so that's refunds filed in 26.
Chair Joachim?
Madam Chair, thank you. So it's for property taxes paid, the 2025 property taxes paid, or for 2026 property taxes paid. I know we lag by 2 years, so I mean, like, you're paying for taxes for the previous year, and then, yeah.
Someday I'll understand this, I swear. Yes. Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez, Representative Joachim, so it's property taxes payable in 26 and refunds filed in 26.
Got Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're doing it on the same year, which is good because sometimes we're paying taxes right now. You know, my husband's doing our taxes right now, and it's on taxes that were paid for property taxes in 2024. But we're trying to like up the cycle, so there'll be even more education that will have to go out. But it's still really important program to do. And like I said, every city, every county, every school district does make different decisions. And some cities have been able to smooth it out over time. Some have to have big bumps depending on what's going on with their infrastructure and aging infrastructure. So this is a way to have one of those tools that's not income eligible, because we also have a lot of income eligible tools on the front end and the back end. So thank you. Have a lot of variety because it will help a lot more people.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this bill and trying to find some solutions to the property tax piece. Commissioner, thank you for what you're doing. I'm hearing it from my commissioners. It's not just the shift for counties, it's also affecting our cities. And then I know at the school district level, a lot of mandates. Can you explain some of the mandates that might have hit you guys from the county in the last 2 years that are kind of putting the pressure on you too for property tax?
Representative Whitty, are you talking about school stuff?
Nope, I'm asking about county mandates.
Okay, about county. Yeah. Okay. Commissioner Jepson.
Yeah, thank you. The first one that comes to mind is one that we don't know how it's going to dramatically impact our levy. It's the, and I apologize if I mess up the long name, the African American Family Preservation Act, I believe is the full term. And that is a mandate put upon us that the intention of it is 100% accurate. We need to look at those children in the foster care system and in child protection that are that come from families of color that are disproportionately in child protection and in child protection for way longer than they need to be, and don't get the attention and don't get the priority that others who are white, Caucasian get. That is absolutely something that has to happen. But based on the information within the statute, it is all focused on documentation and reporting. And we know as county workers, we know as staff, that the more you put a person, a caseworker, in front of a computer versus putting them in front of a person, it's not productive. It's not productive at all. It doesn't help anyone, especially the child. So requiring added so much more documentation and reporting, which might need to happen, but to that extent, that's just going to cost so much more time and really not give the impact that it needs to have on the child.
Thank you, Commissioner Jepson. And we did we had a presentation from AMC and MICA a few weeks ago that talked about, you know, some of these increased costs that you guys are looking at, and also the IT challenges, like how terrible your computers are that your people are having to spend that time interacting with. Also, though, just on the African American Family Preservation Act, it is, to your point, I mean, really addresses a deep and persistent issue in child protection across our state and across our country. It started with a pilot project in Hennepin and Ramsey counties, which was funded. And then we are ensuring that we're learning lessons from the implementation of that pilot as we roll it out to the rest of the state. So, Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Thank you, and thank you for your comments. I think it's always important that we listen to our stakeholders. There's a lot of things that there's some unintended consequences of the good things we try to do, and we forget that. But the shifts are huge, the mandates are huge, especially when they come unfunded, and it can cut programs in areas that we're trying to help. And so that computer piece is very important. So thank you, and thank you, Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Representative Whitty. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. I'm going to take a little different perspective as a former county commissioner, dealing with the same items that you are and blaming the state for all the mandates. And yes, there are a lot of mandates, but sometimes counties do things that do have an effect on their levy. And on those particular things, you may not be able to blame the state. And I'll just give an example. It could be a service, could be a program. But every county has an administrator or a coordinator, right? And that's just the way that the counties are. But wouldn't you know, from time to time, all of a sudden, those administrators or coordinators need an assistant, right? And then they'll start out as a half-time assistant. Before you know it, it's a full-time assistant. And those are some of the things that I used to talk about at the county that, you know, maybe we need to look at, because our budgets are getting tighter. This is no doubt about it. And sometimes counties have to make hard choices. That's just one example, and there's probably many in things that counties do that aren't statutorily required. That's just a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder. Is there any further discussion on the bill? All right. Not seeing any. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and thanks to the committee. I think we highlighted this kind of careful balance and partnership that we have between the state and our local units of government. And this bill supercharges one of the tools that we have at the state level to offer, to kind of take the edge off of those property tax increases that some of our constituents are seeing because of the increased cost pressures that our local units of government are facing. And so we did it once in 2023. I think it worked really well. I know a number of my constituents were thankful for the refund they were able to get, and I'd love to be able to see if we can make this permanent moving forward.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Norris. Thanks again, Commissioner, for being with us. With that, Representative Norris is going to renew his motion that House File 2315, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it is laid over. All right, members, maybe I should schedule six bills every time because somehow we finished early, so because we were highly efficient. Sorry? Oh, yeah, maybe eight next time, so we can get done 15 minutes before now. But thank you so much to all the members who brought bills forward today. I think that these, you know, most of these were bipartisan, you know, had authors from both parties. These are all really focused and tight ways for us to address the cost crisis that so many in our communities are facing. And so, you know, if we have money to spend in the tax bill, I think these are the kind of efforts really that are focused on people's pocketbooks, on relieving cost pressures that we should be considering. Our next hearing is going to be Tuesday, March 26th. Or is that the right date? Yes. Okay. Before we break, Chair Davids.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. And I'd like to announce the bills we have so far for Tuesday. Stay tuned. There could be a couple more. House File 2197, a Robbins bill. House File 631, an Addo bill. House File 698, a Chair Anderson bill. So stay tuned. There could be some more there.
Five more.
Five
more.
We'll just fly through those like nothing, Madam Chair. What I'd like to do for just a second here, you know, some years ago, I coined the phrase the dream team. It was Joel Michael, Steve Hines, Nina Manzi, Pat Dalton. I'm going to forget somebody. Mr. Klayman, were you on that? I think
JV member, maybe.
I think you were on the junior varsity at that time. Yeah, so. So, but, you know, members, we have, I don't say Dream Team 2 because Dream Team 1 would seem better than Dream Team 2 because I think the team we have right now is right there. It is right there. They're amazing. You know, what I'd like to do right now, Miss Schill, no, Miss Schill, it was Cynthia Hi, Templin was on the Dream Team at that
yes,
point.
Yes, she was.
Let's not.
Also a junior varsity member, though, right? Also.
No, she was varsity.
I know, I'm just kidding.
She was varsity. Her and Kathy Schill were varsity back then.
Yeah.
Who did I miss from the Dream Team, Mr. Klayman? It was Joel Michael Hines, Manzi Dalton.
Karen Baker.
I guess Steve Hines. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is I think we're there going into the last couple months here to put a good tax bill together. I think we've got everything in place that we need. But we're going to be missing one. Ms. Hagler is leaving us.
Temporarily.
And Ms. Hagler, I've got a card signed by most members. If you haven't, please sign this. If we could get this over to Ms. Hagler, it says, we'll miss you, signed by all of us, let's get it down to other folks to sign, too, that haven't signed it. So we're going to miss you, Ms. Hagler, and we are going to have a little cake in your honor. And so when the chair adjourns, cake will be served. So best wishes to you. And
all right.
She's not JV. She's on the.
Oh no! You guys are all varsity now.
She's
maybe Mr. Cope. Maybe we're gonna we're gonna get you there. We're gonna. Unfortunately.
Mr. Swans, so, I mean, Mr. Williams, we've got some.
Really we really do. So we're very thankful for you.
Yes.
Wonderful. With that, we are adjourned.